All right, so we were talking about the trans community. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What is that presence like here?
Yeah, and again, I'd say probably less of a community feel and more like some individuals just kind of scattered. At least that's right. My sense. I might be wrong on that, but that's mm-hmm. just my sense. And certainly the youth, our young folks just blowing up the whole gender thing in a lot of ways and just really calling gender norms into question and challenging that stuff. But maybe not identifying as trans mm-hmm. person.
How do you think that's perceived in the community as far as people who are, you know, gender bending?
Yeah, I would say pretty mixed. I would say some folks are pretty uncomfortable with it, and others, whatever.
Yeah.
And some of that, you know, goes along with all the other LGB issues. Some of it is an age thing that probably older folks are maybe less comfortable in general. It's a little bit of a stereotype, but probably in general. Mm-hmm. Whereas the youth, it's not as big of a deal.
Right.
And the whole blowing up gender has been happening, you know, for a long, long time. And so how my generation views it with women wearing blue jeans.
Right.
You know, people 30, 40 years older than me, that would have been out of the question. Uh-huh. So, or working outside of the home as a woman and things like that. So the whole idea of gender stereotypes and roles have been getting blown up forever from my perspective. Mm-hmm. So the youth are just taking it as youth tend to do, and other stuff for them.
Yeah. So what about HIV AIDS in this community? And it doesn't sound like you were around here when it was really playing up, but how do you perceive that issue in this community?
There was a fairly sizable outbreak of HIV about 2 to 3 years ago in Outagamie County, Calumet County. I want to say Outagamie, Winnebago, and Calumet, so just kind of right in this Appleton area. To the point where the CDC got involved, the state of Wisconsin got involved, ARCW for sure got involved, Harmony Cafe got involved to help outreach and educate. We started doing World AIDS Day events to start raise awareness that HIV and AIDS is still out there.
Yeah.
Some of that, within this outbreak, there's a few partners and then a whole bunch of their partners, so there's this whole graph of folks that they mapped out. And I could give you the report that was done on that kind of maps all and explains all the details.
Right.
Yeah. As they interviewed some people, there were some of the folks who tested positive in their interview questions said, well, I didn't think I had to wear condoms or wear protection because I'm in Appleton, Wisconsin. I'm not in Chicago or Milwaukee, so I thought it was safe here. So that sort of mentality that somehow the HIV virus only exists in big cities and it doesn't happen in small cities. So there was sort of that, here in Appleton, everything's safe mentality. That was part of the problem, that people were being careless. And so part of the work that we did in the past few years is just to get it back on people's radar that this is still an issue. Another big piece of it is early on, like when I was in high school, HIV/AIDS was incredibly mysterious at first. No one knew what was going on, why all these people were dying. And everybody who got it, like, died quickly, it seems. They, you know, if you had HIV, it was like a death sentence, and in a year you'd be dead. It was just horrible. And then somewhere in the, I don't know if it was in the 90s or whatever, when the medication started coming out, and you had people like Magic Johnson, basketball player, who's still alive. He tested positive for HIV, and he's still alive. And so some folks like my age and younger, HIV is not as scary of a thing, because it's like, you know, the youth nowadays, either they haven't really heard of it, or if they have heard of it, it's not a death sentence in their mind. It's like, well, it's just another thing you get, you know. It's maybe more serious than a cold, but less serious than cancer. Somewhere in there, that's sort of the, I would judge that to be the mentality, just not on their radar a whole lot. Whereas if you were, you know, as old as me, it was like, holy crap, that's a serious thing, because you knew people died instantly from it. So a lot of what we've done lately has been awareness. We do that with our youth group three times a year, where we do educational programs for them specific to safer sex, whether it's abstinence or other forms of safer sex. We do the World AIDS Day thing every year that's open to the general community, and we've gotten newspaper press and a lot of publicity from it. And then certainly partner with like ARCW and other organizations to help keep that on people's radar.
So can you talk a little bit about your work right now? Like, what's going on right now?
For me personally, I bounce between the two Harmony Cafes,
okay.
And each one of them is really, in a lot of ways, like an LGBT community center, but also like a coffee house and like a multicultural center, mm-hmm. diversity center. It's like a whole bunch of things all thrown into one, mm-hmm. Which is a pretty unique model. As far as we know, there's no other model like this in the United States where you have what is truly an LGBT center, mm-hmm. but also is a coffee house.
And yeah.
Most of the people coming here only just know vaguely about the LGBT work we do. So a lot of what I am doing now has been work with the two centers, the two Harmony Cafes, mm-hmm. making sure our youth groups, the two GLBT partnerships that we have are going well. We helped get a third youth group started up in Neenah. We don't have a Harmony Cafe there, but we took on an intern for a year who learned how to run the program,
okay.
and then she started one up in Neenah at a different youth organization. So now there's three youth groups meeting every week, and we've got a few adult groups meeting, and we're also really engaged in the broader community as far as LGBT awareness events. We had a big event this past January where we had a busload of 80 community leaders spend an entire day learning about LGBT issues, and most weren't necessarily allies, or you know, allies but wouldn't know what LGBT stood for,
right.
kind of folks, but good people that
right.
are willing to at least learn. Like the mayor of Appleton was on that bus, and some business leaders and CEOs, and the head of the Chamber of Commerce locally. Mm. And so just really, if you take like a good cross section of 80 of our community's
yeah.
biggest leaders, threw them all on a bus for a day, and they spent a chunk of the day here at Harmony, where we did some education pieces. We had a Lawrence professor do some education pieces about the science and the biology aspects of gender and sexuality and
uh-huh.
orientation. We brought them to East High School, where they met with youth and adults as far as school issues. We brought them on a bus to the UCC church, where three different reverends, Presbyterian, a UCC reverend, and Reverend Roger, UU reverend, all spoke about LGBT issues from a faith perspective. And so they really had like a full day
yeah.
immersion in LGBT issues. And this group, as a follow-up to that, is now wanting to do some big community projects this coming probably January, where they're looking to bring Jamie Novosny to the community for a few weeks to show the movie Bullied and to have him go out into schools and speak, and looking to have a big community breakfast. And the group that put on this plunge is what it's called with the bus,
okay.
has done big community breakfasts before. And typically
okay.
they'll have 300 to 400 people at these breakfasts.
Wow.
And I think it's a big community leader type events. We're actually doing this plunge group that we're involved with is doing a community breakfast next week, Wednesday, related to domestic violence and sexual assault men stepping up and raising awareness about those issues. And so it's called Voices of Men. I'm involved with that too. And that group is on, it's going to be their third breakfast now. So that 2 years ago they had a 400-man breakfast. Last year we had a 350-man breakfast. And then we're having another breakfast this year as our third breakfast. And looking at about 500 men
wow.
there. About 350 men and about 150 high school males to learn about how men can step up and preventing domestic violence and sexual assault. And so the reason I mention that, for a few reasons. One is the same organization that helped spearhead that is also the one that did the plunge that's going to
uh-huh.
help spearhead this LGBT breakfast. So they've got credibility, they know how to do it.
Right.
So it's not just some like crazy idea, but this is going to happen. And the other reason I mention is because there's a lot of crossover actually in the root causes of domestic violence and sexual assault, and the root causes of homophobia and that, and it relates to the man box and how our boys are being raised and how they're taught what gender is and how you have to act, and if you're outside of that box, then you're, you know, if you're outside of that box and you're like a female, you're less than, and so from an abuse standpoint, it justifies treating women poorly because they're considered less than.
Right.
And from a homophobia standpoint, males who go outside of that box, they're considered less than, so they get called the same names. You get called a girl or a sissy or, you know, all those things. It's the same stuff. It's all intertwined. But not everybody can, not everybody would come to a breakfast about homophobia.
Right.
Not every man would in our community. But there's a lot of men that would be more than willing to come to a breakfast about domestic violence and sexual assault. And so they're getting, it's a lot of crossover.
Yeah.
It's a lot of crossover because it all ties into gender and how we raise our boys and all that. And it ties in because it's the same group. So we're really involved in the Voices of Men project and this other blast of stuff that we're going to be doing come January. I don't know if it's public knowledge yet or publicly even determined yet, but I just heard yesterday that there's a reasonable chance that our community's book read for this fall or this next year is going to be an LGBT related book. So it's at least a possibility. And I was going to say it's off the record, but I guess I just sent it on into your microphone. But word on the street is that there's a reasonable chance that our next community book read, which is done through a whole series of our local libraries, Appleton, Needham, Menasha, Kitana, where they choose a book, and everybody in the community reads that book, and there's lots of discussions about it, and they bring the author in and all that. And we've done a bunch of those community book reads, and they get a ton of press and a ton of visibility.
Yeah.
And it's at least word on the street is that it's going to be an LGBT themed book for this coming year. So that would really tie in well with Jamie Nabosny coming to this big breakfast and some of this other stuff we're looking at. So there's a lot of, just like, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
The amount of cool stuff happening. And really this type of stuff that's happening, whether it's all these events happening, or the Two Harmony Cafes happening, or the partnership with these business leaders and stuff. To me, you know, when I kind of say like Madison's 10 years ahead of us, this puts us in some ways doing stuff that's right up there as progressive, or maybe in some ways even more progressive than some stuff that's probably happening in Madison. As a community, I think we're still behind. I think as the average person on the street in Madison's going to be more LGBT friendly or aware. But as far as like some of what the leaders are doing, as far as the amount of what I would call straight ally leaders or ally organizations, so not just LGBT organizations, not just the LGBT Center, or even like AIDS Resource Center, which is an LGBT, but it's kind of seen as an LGBT organization. You know, we're probably similar to Madison, Milwaukee with those organizations, but I say as far as sort of on the straight ally community leaders and the straight ally, kind of putting that in quotes.
Yeah.
I'll mention that for the microphone. But
yeah, no.
The ally organizations who are part of like our healthcare organizations like PlayToCare, like our school district, like Google Industries, which those aren't LGBT organizations, but they're part of doing some really amazing stuff. And I think my sense is those things that are happening in this Appleton area right now are probably on par, or maybe even ahead of some of the stuff happening in Madison, Milwaukee.
Right.
So that's, to me, that's a really cool thing as far as what's happening.
Yeah.
Some exciting stuff.
So working with Voices of Men and having these, you know, quote ally, straight ally companies, how do you get them to participate? You know, as you know. People who might be, you know, like straight, upper middle class, white men, how do you convince them that this is something that you should be interested in?
It's relationships, I'd say. It's a lot of relationships. It's, you know, if you'd ask specifically me how I get those folks involved, I think part of what I've been fortunate to do and be is being part of Harmony Cafe and Goodwill Industries, where it's a very diverse, eclectic organization that works with a lot of people in a lot of ways. And so much of the work I do in the community that Harmony Cafe does in the community is not LGBT focused.
Right.
So we work, like the people who just kicked us out of the room up there, that's a mental health group that has nothing to do with LGBT, but we build that relationship.
Right.
And we work with other folks on other things. So we partner in so many ways with kind of everybody in the community. We're open to partnering with
right.
so many people, even folks and organizations who aren't, who don't see LGBT issues the same as us, but we
right.
might partner with them on other things.
Yeah.
So that, for instance, there's fairly conservative churches who partner here at Harmony Cafe, who on an LGBT standpoint, we would differ, no question about
right.
it. But on a sex trafficking in Thailand issue, we are both in agreement, and so we'll partner into a program related to sex trafficking in Thailand,
right.
or we'll do a program related to homelessness in the Fox Valley, because we our values align on that, and then we build that relationship, and then eventually they find out about our LGBT work, and then they get invited to the table for those things, even if they're not a Harpsund board.
Right.
So I think it's finding common ground and common values about a whole bunch of different justice issues, and building those relationships and building the credibility.
Uh-huh.
And also probably being open with people as to where they're at.
Yeah.
So Harmony Cafe is not a place where we're like so radical that nobody's cool enough for
right.
us kind of a place.
Right.
And we're so LGBT and you all suck because you're all ignorant. That's
yeah.
not the approach we take here. We kind of just work with everybody on their issues, and I think that's a very comforting place for folks to come along on this issue. And so, for instance, like this last plunge that we did with the busload of community leaders, a lot of those leaders walked into that plunge not really sure where they stood on this issue, but we gave them the safe space to say, join us for the day, learn some stuff, we're not going to force you to think anything, you can ask questions in a safe space,
yeah.
and just see where things end up on it. And you know, I don't want to mention names necessarily,
mm-hmm.
but there was one community leader in particular who was really kind of against the plunge to begin with. And he left the plunge as an ally enough that he was willing to take an endorsement from Fair Wisconsin
really?
For a political thing after that plunge. And it wasn't our mayor, but
right.
it was somebody else who went into that plunge very uncomfortable, and he would openly admit it,
yeah.
and left the plunge comfortable enough that he said, this LGBT organization, Fair Wisconsin, can give me an endorsement, and I'll take the heat for it if any backlash
right.
comes. That's how much he shifted just through that event. And I think,
yeah.
I think part of our approach has been to partner with him, for instance, on a whole bunch of other stuff, and build that relationship
yeah.
and build that trust that he knew he could be honest about where he was right now, and that if he changed, we gave him room to grow on that.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah,
I
yeah.
think that's really what our specialty and forte is. It's really how open our door is to folks who are all over the spectrum on LGBT
right.
issues. And if you think of any other LGBT center, you would look around. Like if we surveyed this room right now, everybody in the room as to where they stand on LGBT issues, they'd probably be all over the spectrum.
Right, right.
There's probably people here that are way on one side and some way on the other and some in the middle. Kind of like our general population.
Yeah.
If you look at most LGBT centers, it would be these
yeah.
people on one end who all kind of think alike versus the whole spectrum of people. And everybody all thinking alike doesn't challenge people to grow or to move anywhere. So,
yeah.
So that's really our forte. And so that's my approach.
Right.
It's
yeah. really powerful. And so how do you think that plunge event has, if at all, changed the way that this community runs in terms of LGBTQ issues?
I don't know if I could put my finger on any anything specific to how the community runs. I would say individuals have shifted and have awakenings or insights or just new ways of seeing the world. So certainly individuals have shifted. That influence, how it spreads out, it's hard for me to say. So if you're the CEO of some business and now you're just like, whoa, I didn't even know this was an issue, how does that change how your business is? It probably does, but I can't put my finger on it. I can't give you details. But I would say that everybody that's went on that plunge, on that bus ride, and there's, I want to say it was about 70, I think I said 80, but I think it was more like 70, 72 or something like that. All they committed to was that one day, and that was it. They didn't have to come back for a single thing. 2 weeks later, we had another planning session here at Harmony that was optional. People were welcome to come to offer feedback about that plunge. And about 45 of the 70-some showed up, which, and a handful just had a conflict, so just couldn't come. So probably 50, 55 would have come. That's a pretty huge percentage, especially knowing not just did you give up a whole day for this issue, but now you got a whole nother, like a morning meeting, 7:30 at Harmony for 2 hours. And knowing that that morning meeting, everybody who came to that meeting knew that there's a reasonable chance that they were going to walk out of that meeting, sign up for a committee, or sign up for additional work. Like, you don't just come to another meeting where it's just like, I'm just here for 2 more hours. They walked into it knowing that if I go to that other meeting, I might get roped into something else. And except for maybe 2 or 3 people, I would say every one of those folks is probably full-time plus. Busy as heck people. So to know that if you go, you're going to be on another committee, you're going to be doing something, to me says a lot. So for that many people to come, was I expected about 25 to 30 to show up. That we set up tables and chairs for about that many, and all of a sudden, like over 40 came, and a whole bunch of them are the ones that then have stuck with this and are looking to do this big breakfast event, looking to do the Jamie Nabosny thing. And actually, there's a third piece that a few folks are looking to do, which is just as important. I just didn't mention it. But it's a welcoming and inclusive business campaign. And it's really to, they're trying to develop sort of just a document or some sort of standards that businesses can sign on to, that they'll say, yeah, I agree to all these things, I sign on, and then they'll get a sticker or something that says I'm a welcoming, inclusive business, and be able to advertise themselves as that. It's a campaign that's being led through this group, and great people working on it. We're hoping when we have this big breakfast that we'll have 12 to 20 major community organizations as our initial like kickoff, like, boom, look, here's Goodwill, here's Kimberly Clark, here's whatever those organizations are who are our inaugural welcoming inclusive businesses, and here's what they all are doing and are agreeing to do. And if you're not one of those businesses, but you're one of the 400 people in this breakfast, wouldn't you want to have your business's name on it? Here's how you do it, that sort of thing. So it's a really cool way to approach folks. And really, sort of, when I look at, like, theoretically how we're doing it, it's really getting at the issue from two different institutional and age approaches. If you look at, like, where people spend their time, what institutions people spend their time in, if you're under 18, the institution that rules your life is school. Mm-hmm. And if you're over 18, the institution that rules your life is work.
Right.
It's just a given. That's where we spend our time. You know, we spend a little time in church on Sundays or Saturdays or whatever, and a little time maybe going to vote in the government, but your major institutions are school and work. Mm-hmm. That's where we, from 6 until we retire, that's where we spend the majority of our time. And so getting Jamie Nabosny here to do the Bullied movie, to go around all the different schools, is really approaching that youth, that school institution, and then the welcoming inclusive business is kind of approaching those kids' parents, so you're kind of hitting both sides of the community, which I think makes a lot of sense to do it from both ways.
So one of the things I think we're trying to get at with the people we're interviewing is how do their identities play out in the work that they do. Can you speak to that at all? And you know, everyone has a spectrum of identities. How do you think your identities play out in the work that you do?
I think typically I'm defined as an ally in most ways, but I think I'm very flexible from an identity standpoint. Really love challenging those identities. So I think particularly like from a man box standpoint, which is where a lot of our work lies, I wouldn't fit too tightly in the classical man box categories. In some ways I would, and in some ways I wouldn't. So when we talk about like man box as being athletic and things like that, I'm actually like, I played soccer all my life, so that I'm pretty comfortable in the soccer world, but is soccer really a man box sport? Yeah, it's right on the edge there. It's a sport, but you know, it's not football or wrestling, so it's maybe not right in the center of the man box. But it's a sport, so it's at least close to the man box. And I can throw football with the best of them and catch a football with the best of them. So from a man box sport standpoint, I'd say I'd fit okay there. In other ways where the man box, like the whole like not have emotions and not be sensitive to other people and all that stuff, I blow way outside of that man box and fit in some ways more in the what would typically be called like the feminine side of things. I'd be, I'm a counselor, you know, I'm not within a tool shop or you know, things like that. Love to garden, love plants, have feelings, have emotions, and are okay expressing them. All those things that are typically seen as outside of the man box. I'd say I'm pretty comfortable blowing out of that and even making fun of that the man box thing. And really, if you call it gender bending or just, you know, whatever you call it, just challenging gender norms and what it means to be a man in our community. So certainly, in that sense, I think I challenge those things. I think in another sense from an identity standpoint, I really find myself in privilege areas. So being white, being identified as a male, being identified as straight, being identified as middle class-ish. I don't know if I'm thought of as a Christian. I guess religiously I'm probably more on the outside. But I have a lot of those privileged pieces going for me, and I'm aware of it, is at least moderately aware of it. I don't know if all of us are truly aware of exactly how much privilege we have, if we have privilege.
Yeah.
It's maybe hard to truly be aware of it. And we probably all have a little bit of privilege, and we all have a little bit of not, and it's different varying levels. So I think I've got a moderate level awareness, probably more than the average middle-class, white, male, who was at least raised Christian. I wouldn't know if I identify as that now. So probably more aware than the average. And I guess my thoughts on that is I really try to use that privilege for good. You know, there's a lot of things you can do with it. You can take advantage. You can use it for yourself, you can use it for others. And I think I probably use it for myself and don't even realize it, but I think I also try to use it for others. So if I can get indoors and make things happen because I've got those advantages, absolutely I'll use it and try to do good with it. And I think there's a lot of power that an ally has, no matter which of those categories you're talking to, that a person who identifies in one of those oppressed categories does not have. So, you know, when I'm involved with Voices of Men work, I know that there's like people I can talk to about domestic violence and sexual assault that if a woman had that same conversation, she wouldn't be listened to as much. So I'm gonna take advantage of that, and I'm gonna like use that to help do good. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, and there's some things that, you know, other people will listen to more from an ally than maybe from someone of the oppressed group. And really with all the different social justice movements, it's always been a partnership of the allies and the oppressed population, no matter what it is. So if it's women's rights, it can't just be women fight for them. You gotta put men there too. And if it's people with disabilities, it's gotta be the parents of the kids with disabilities and all those other folks working with them. So that's always been the case in all those movements. And I guess my sense is that I've got a lot of the ally privilege, and so I try to partner with a lot of the other groups and be that ally person in the movement.
So how do you see, what do you see as this community's biggest challenge in terms of LGBTQ issues and civil rights going forward?
Two things. Change and religion would be the two things. Change being that different people have different comfort levels with change, and part of that I think is just genetic makeup or whatever it is, that some people are very okay with change and some people just are not, no matter what the change is. And I like to jokingly talk about this, but like up in Green Bay, like when they start putting roundabouts in up there, people were freaking out about roundabouts because all their life they had stop and go lights. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter how much you have like experts come in, and they were having meetings at our Harmony Cafe, and like 50 angry mob full of adults would show up, and the expert would come in from the Department of Transportation and would say, here's the pros and cons of roundabouts, here's the pros and cons of stop and go lights.
Yeah.
And in every way imaginable, if you at all are thinking with an open mind, you would say roundabouts are better.
Yeah.
But they still just were so mad and just didn't change. Ooh, that's new, and people are gonna get run over in roundabouts, and sometimes they're gonna get stuck in them, and ambulances are gonna get spinning around lost, and they'll never get to the hospital.
Yeah.
People will die, and just all this—it's just change. It's fear of change, and some people are just more change averse, and some people are more open to change.
Mm-hmm.
And any of these justice movements involve change, involve society shifting how we do things. And so if society used to have, like, men were always in charge, and men ran the house, and men worked, and women didn't, and all that stuff, then when you start to change that, some people get really nervous about that.
Yeah.
Like, that's not right. You know, this is how it's always been. This is how it should be. And to some extent, that's what conservatism is. It's about going back to the old ways.
Yeah.
So this is how it used to be, the good old days, waving the flags and shooting guns and you know, nostalgia of that good old, the way it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And all this change is crazy and scary and horrible. So I think that's huge. And that crosses, that's not just LGBT.
Right.
But people who are afraid of change in general, I would say there's probably a correlation between people who are afraid of change for roundabouts and people who are afraid of domestic partner benefits and same-sex marriage. Because that's just how it is.
Yeah.
And how do you get past that? I don't know. It's inching people along, I guess. Inching them along. It's people that, you know, when a VCR came out, refused to get a VCR because they were freaked out about it. And then when cell phones came out, still are using the corded phone because they don't want to change. But then eventually, they do.
Right.
And eventually they get on Facebook and they get a cell phone, and it just takes them long.
Wow.
And eventually they'll get on board with LGBT issues.
Right.
It just takes longer. But that's why society is shifting on those issues. So that's one. The religion piece is just really, really tough, too.
Yeah.
Because if people feel like religion is just one of those things that it's tough for people to question, to have a questioning mind on. So if they feel the Bible says this, or if they feel that Allah said that, or whatever, you can say all you want. But if when it comes to heaven and hell and those beliefs, I mean, that's a tough one. That's a tricky one.
Yeah, is the religious, what can you say about the religious community here, this area?
I'd say civil. Differing views, but civil. I mean, the kind of stuff you're seeing in, I don't want to stereotype the South, but there's been some churches and religious folks around other places in the country. It seems to be more Southern churches where they talk about rounding gays up and killing gays.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, you know, I keep seeing on Facebook different churches and minister that talked about beating the sissy out of your boy, and if he acts this way, punch him and toughen him up and that type of stuff. I just don't think that kind of lack of civility happens as much. It's more subtle. It's not necessarily better or worse, but it's more subtle here than just, other people and kill them. That just wouldn't fly in our community, I don't think. So, so it's like more civil, but not necessarily where we need to be.
Right. Sort of a, like, hate the sin, love the sinner sort of mentality here. And are there churches that have, besides the ones, well, I guess you have mentioned some, but churches that you've seen a shift in the way they treat LGBTQ people in their congregations or their stance?
I'm trying to think if I've seen shifts in churches. Probably has been. Nothing really pops to mind. It's more individuals within churches who are rising up and raising the issue. So it's more of a grassroots from the ground up sort of thing. So like there's a group of women up in the Green Bay area who are all Catholics who just started meeting to have like a Catholic women LGBT supportive group that they formed. So it wasn't coming from the Pope.
Right.
But it was coming from the Catholic women as very grassrootsy. So I think a lot of that stuff's happening. As far as the other church, I'm sure they're shifting because society's shifting, but I just can't put my finger on. I couldn't call out a specific church and say, here's where they were, here's where they are.
Right.
Big thing I've noticed. I'm sure it's there, but I just can't say it.
And what have you seen the most change in since you've started doing work here in this community in terms of LGBTQ issues?
What have I seen? I'm not sure what the question is.
So what do you think has changed for the better the most?
The most. I'd say ally awareness. The facts that most of our community now knows what the initials LGBT stand for and didn't 5 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, that seems so simple-minded, but I think that's a big thing. I mean, how do you even start talking about something if you don't even have words for it or you're not even talking about it in the first place? So just having, like, the fact that I can go on the street and say to the average person LGBT and they probably know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
5 years ago, not a chance. So... that alone, just that initial like awareness, is huge.
Yeah.
Absolutely huge. Yeah. So that's probably the biggest thing. So that's more of the masses. The activists are still doing what they've always been doing. There's probably more who've joined us, more who were kind of in the middle before and have now kind of come out more as activists. So I think most of our community has shifted. But I'd say that not knowing anything at all to now knowing a little bit is powerful because it's a lot more people that have shifted versus just a few sort of allies are now bigger allies. So it's more the masses changing. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But that's what I would say.
Yeah. Do you have any questions you want to ask?
No, you can.
Well, I think that's all we
have. Have I talked the longest of all your people? It's got to be pretty close.
I don't think you beat Mike. But thank you so much.
Yeah.